Do you have 1,000 rupees burning a hole in your pocket? If so, then check out the great deals on Amazon.com. Find all the best prices on everything you need and help support Amazing Race podcasts when you start your shopping at robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who runs a podcasting sweatshop, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to our Sunday night Amazing Race wrap-up, a.k.a. Amazing Race After Dark. And I am Rob Cesternino, and I am running the podcasting sweatshop. And Jessica Lee, you have to make a bunch of podcasts by the end of the day today.
Yep, here I am in the salt mines for 5 cents an hour.
Yeah, I felt the whole sequence in the Sri Lankan garment shop, I felt that was very depressing.
Yeah, it was a little bit, but they seemed to be, they didn't seem miserable.
Yeah, they seemed happy, I guess.
That's the nicest thing I could say for that.
Okay. Yeah, it seemed like there was a fan going. It seemed like there wasn't even air conditioning in there, but it seems really, really not fun.
Yeah, I mean, nobody yelled at the guy who was spinning the basketball.
Yeah, I guess not. All right, so we're going to talk about the Amazing Race here tonight. Talk about everything that happened in for those of you guys on the East Coast, probably a lot of people may not have even gotten to the Amazing Race on a Sunday night because it was so delayed by the NCAA basketball. I think the show started at 8:40 p.m. on the East Coast.
Yeah, 8:40.
Yeah.
I mean, Warren Buffett should pay me $1 billion because I have to keep sitting through these sports delays.
Jess, and very sadly, I know your Amazing Race All-Star bracket is busted now. You had Margie and Luke in the Final Four, I thought, in your brackets.
No, I don't think I ever had Margie and Luke anywhere near the top. I got to be honest with you.
I thought you told me you had them in the Final Four.
When did I say that? Did I say that?
Did you have them in the Great Eight?
It's not hard to make the Great Eight on the Amazing Race. That's basically, you just have to not mess up for the first three episodes.
Hey, well, Margie and Luke, they were in the Great Eight, and it was sort of a drama-free episode for them, especially after the last week's show where Luke had such a meltdown doing the bartending task. It was sort of like they sort of knew they were out of it from the get-go, so it was sort of like they were able to enjoy the ride.
Yeah. Yeah, and I said last week I wondered if he got it all out of his system, and maybe this week, you know, he didn't have anything left to throw a tantrum about.
Yeah. Now, in the last All-Stars appearance for Margie and Luke, what was their appearance on, or their finish on Unfinished Business?
It was pretty close to the end. I think it might have been, it was 7th or 8th place.
And what was their finish in the first time they were on?
First time they were on, they made the finals.
Okay. All right. So maybe their best racing is behind them.
That is entirely possible.
That's possible. They could have peaked.
Yeah. They peaked very early.
Yeah. All right. So Margie and Luke, they are eliminated. We will have an exit interview with Margie and Luke on Monday morning. And I'll be interested to see how CBS handle that. If it's just going to be, I'm going to be on the phone with Margie and she's going to be talking to Luke and telling me what Luke is saying, or we'll figure out exactly how that's going to go. We may be just figuring it out on the fly on Monday morning.
Yeah, I'm curious as well.
Okay. So we'll see how exactly that's going to work out. But I felt like, Jess, the most interesting thing from this episode here tonight was the Brentschel's Gambit, which I was getting all expected to be covering this as the latest to fall into the misconnection trap that we saw befall Ephraim and who was his partner? Chester.
Chester
and yeah. Ephraim last season.
Yeah, I was fully expecting to see Phil come into the airport to eliminate them on his way to the next leg.
Yeah, but it worked. And even the guy in the travel agency said, I don't recommend this. This is not a good idea. And Brentschel scoffed at the person who said, I don't recommend doing this.
Yeah, they shut it down.
They shut it down and said, we have to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good on them. This was great, amazing race.
Yeah, when you take a risk and it pays off like that, it can make for some of the most exciting moments in the season.
Now, in your expertise, should they, I know it worked, but we can't let results dictate whether a move was the right decision or not. In your opinion, did they make the right call by making a risky move, a Hail Mary that worked, or should they have waited it out and seen if they could get on the flight on standby?
I think in this case, the thing that tripped up Chester and Ephraim last season was that they had more than one connection.
Yeah.
And I think it's not as huge a risk if there's only one connection and you have to sprint to get to it. You know, more often than not, that works okay. It is a big gamble, but they didn't have a lot of options. If they couldn't get on that other flight standby, there weren't any other direct flights they could get on. And they would have ended up doing what Margie and Luke did, and it would have made for a more exciting episode, but it would have sucked more for them.
So if you were advising Brenschel at that point, you would have said, go to Singapore, go for the connecting flight.
Yeah, go for it, because there were a lot of, Singapore seems to be the hub, so if they didn't get that flight, they might be able to get the very next one.
Yeah. And basically what happened with Margie and Luke was that they just missed out and they couldn't even get on a flight until the next morning. So it was basically they were sort of all in on the waiting for standby. It was basically both of them made like an all-in move.
Yeah.
And so Brenschel decides to go with the more assertive all-in move and Margie and Luke went with the more passive all-in move of let's just wait it out here and let's see what happens. And if we don't get on the standby flight, we're kind of screwed. But it ended up working out. Fortune favors the bold, Jessica.
I guess so.
Yeah. So do you feel like the race had it set up, though, where there was such a big delay that a team could have caught up had they missed that first flight?
Yeah, definitely, because you saw what time they left. Nobody left the airport until the middle of the night. And you know that if you're flying short flight in the middle of the night, you're going to get there at like 4 a.m. and you're going to show up at the route marker and it's going to say hours of operation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as long as you get there before the sun comes up, you probably still have a shot in it.
Now, I feel like a lot of people have been making a big fuss, and we've talked about it on this show, about, oh, people aren't being allowed to book their own flights. Was this the first time this season that we saw the teams get to book their own flights?
Yeah, and I was happy to see that because I was worried they were just going to hand them flights for the entire rest of the series, and, you know, that eliminates a lot of the drama.
Yeah. Now, why would they do it sometimes and not other times?
I think it depends on... I think this season they may have had a sponsor. They may have gotten some promotional consideration from AirAsia, and there may be a limit to the number of AirAsia flights that go to the places they wanted to go. The other thing I've heard, and I'm not sure exactly all of the particulars of this, but apparently Malaysia may have been a replacement leg for some other location that... And for whatever reason, they had to slot it in last minute, so they didn't have the flights kind of prearranged.
Did you feel like the tasks for Malaysia were sort of thrown together, that it would seem like it was a replacement leg?
It did a little bit. I mean, I think they did a good job for coming up with stuff on the fly, especially when you consider that they didn't do a whole lot of creative thinking this leg. They lifted half the tasks from Amazing Race Australia.
Uh-oh. All right, but only you would notice that.
I guess only I would notice that. It's true.
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to be watching all these foreign editions of the show, but the temple was the exact same temple. The sweatshop was the exact same sweatshop.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe they traded. Maybe, you know, Bertram can't sit there and say, but Jessica will know if we do this.
You know, maybe he should start. I demand that Bertram start taking my expertise into consideration when he's planning this stuff out.
Okay. So now with the standby flight for Margie and Luke, how many tickets did they actually need for standby? Because it's not just Margie and Luke. Do they actually need four people to not show up for the flight to be able for Margie and Luke to get on the plane?
Yeah, you always need to buy four tickets. It's for you, your partner, and the crew, because everybody has a camera guy and a sound guy. And so whenever you see them buying two tickets, they're actually buying four tickets.
Yeah.
So there is not a lot of there's not a great chance that four people are not going to show up for a full flight.
Okay. You never know. I kind of feel like, what are the, do we know from watching The Amazing Race, what are the percentages of people that don't show up for a flight? Do we know this? Like the odds?
We don't really know this. They don't always show it when that happens.
No, I just mean in general, yeah. Like what are the odds that people don't show up for an airline flight?
It seems like more often than not, when we're shown people getting on a standby flight, when they get the standby tickets, it usually pays off and they get on the flight.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe that happens more often than you'd think.
Okay. Maybe somebody knows. Oh, we should have asked Jody Winchesky when she was on that, the number of people that are, that miss flights.
Yeah, you know, we can totally tweet at her.
Yeah. Maybe she knows. Maybe she knows.
She might know.
We got good feedback. People liked hearing from what Jody had to say about casting.
Yeah, yeah. She was a great guest.
Good stuff. So let's now Brenschel, they had their big gambit and they end up in first place, but it's a short-lived first place for Brenschel because of course they have to wait for the place to open up in the morning. And then everybody sort of just goes through the temple very quickly. Did you know that Brendan had studied Buddhism?
Well, Brendan is pretty well read. I guess it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Who knew, right?
Yeah.
And so after everybody goes on the train ride, we get to a detour, which was fishing pole versus spin control. Why did John and Jessica have such a hard time with the fishing pole?
Well, I think it was more of a chance-based task than a skills-based task. I don't know if that they were doing anything wrong, but it seemed like, you know, we always say on this show that you should never choose the task that involves animals, and fish are animals. I'm just saying some people were having better luck than other people, but it was like you had a skill-based task versus a luck-based task, and they were just not having any luck. And then when John finally did land a fish, he dropped it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I would have gone with the fishing pole. Not that I'm an expert fisherman or anything like that, but I feel like I would rather just do something where I just stand there instead of having to learn a dance.
It's true. And that dance didn't look like it was particularly easy to learn.
Yeah. Learn a dance and spin a plate. And it seems very complicated.
Yeah. That requires a lot of coordination. I'd take my chance with the fish too.
Yeah. And once again, I have to say, I was very impressed with Brenschel, and it is completely reversed where Brendan, even though he studied Buddhism, he's the one that seems like more likely to, you know, have some cracks around the edges, whereas Rachel is the calming presence.
Yeah, I mean, marriage has been very, very good to Rachel.
I guess so. I would not recognize this person if the 2000 and I guess the 2010 Rob, who was podcasting, watched this. I would say, I don't know who this person is.
Yeah.
This is nothing like the Rachel from Big Brother 12.
She's too low-key and positive to ever go on a show like Big Brother.
Yeah. I don't know. Was it Brendan studying Buddhism that got Rachel to be so calm now?
Yeah, you know, nobody asked Rachel if she studied Buddhism. Maybe she's been meditating.
I don't know. Her sister is a yogi.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
She's got that influence coming from all directions.
Yeah, the Eastern influence on the Riley family.
Yeah, she's found some inner peace.
Yeah. Jess, one of the things I wanted to ask you about also from the episode tonight was there was also a question in the episode of, okay, the airport is far away. Do we go to the nearest travel agency or should we go directly to the airport? In your experience, what is the best way to go?
I feel like if they suggest that you go to a travel agent, you go to the travel agent.
So why would anybody not just go to a travel agent?
I think because if they're concerned about getting to the airport, at least, you know, you're one step closer to the next step if you're at the airport getting tickets. I think Margie and Luke might have been okay if they'd found the travel agent right away, because the travel agent knows everything. If you get to the airport, you might not run into the person that knows how to get your tickets first thing. And it looked like that was one of the things they were having trouble with.
Now, when you get to the airport, what do? You go to the counter of like the, let's say, okay, you go, when you get to the airport, do you go to the counter of like Singapore Air or wherever they were going? They were going to Sri Lanka, whatever Sri Lanka Air. And are they able to pull up all of the different airlines from there and tell you what, you know, what flight goes where?
Yeah, they typically have the data from all of the different airlines, and I don't know that they can't sell you the ticket directly, but they could tell you, you know, there's another flight that's leaving from this airline connecting through this place. I've noticed that a lot. I have flown a lot in the wintertime and gotten stranded at airports before, and the ticket counter has been able to say, like, if I'm flying on United, they can tell me, well, there's a Delta flight that's leaving, and sometimes they can even transfer the ticket over, but I think you generally have to buy the ticket from the airline at the airline.
Yeah, it just seems odd to me. Like, I feel like if I was ever at the airport and I go up to the JetBlue counter and I'm like sort of in a friendly, like, I need to get to Los Angeles. Like, oh, well, we don't really have a flight right now, but I can see that Virgin America has, they could pull all that up right there?
Yeah, they can pull that up right there.
And they wouldn't just alert security?
No.
Okay.
Well, I think it probably helps if you have
the Amazing Race
an Amazing Race camera crew and matching outfits. I think that probably goes a long way.
Because I feel like when I get to the front of the line at the airport, I feel like I'm lucky that they're just gonna accept my bag. Like, I feel like anything extra that I'm asking the people at the terminal at the airport, they seem very off put by this.
Yeah, I feel like basic human decency is a victory when it comes to airline employees.
Yeah. We might get letters about that, Jess.
Maybe so. I guess I should probably look out when I'm booking my next travel.
So, but are the in foreign countries that we would imagine the airport employees might be more helpful?
Yeah, that's probably fair. I think it depends a lot on the country.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a lot on the culture and a lot on, you know, how well the airline treats its employees.
So John and Jessica ultimately end up switching in this task. Did you agree with their decision to switch?
Yeah, I think they had given it enough of a try that they knew they weren't going to get out of there in a hurry. They also knew that Margie and Luke were somewhere behind them. They hadn't seen them yet, so they had time to at least give the other roadblock a shot.
In your mind, how do you know when you're a team on the race, when it's time to switch?
I feel like if you have exhausted every possible strategy and it's not getting any easier and you haven't made any progress at all, I think that's when it's time to switch.
Okay. And you agreed with their switch here?
Yeah, I think that was a smart move.
Okay. So they end up switching, they end up doing the dance, and they don't really have any sort of problem with that. And everybody sort of ends up in the same place at the same time of putting the shirt together. And it looked like the conditions were very tough. I kind of feel like the inspector, I feel like he was a little friendlier today than he probably is on a normal day.
Yeah, he seemed like he was in a pretty good mood. I noticed he did something kind of weird that I don't see a lot of Amazing Race task judges do, which was he pointed out what people were doing wrong, which I feel like you're not supposed to do that.
Maybe he's used to. Now, do you think that's the real guy that works in the sweatshop of the, I shouldn't say it's a sweatshop, but it's the garment industry place?
Yeah, we should probably stop calling it a sweatshop because I'm sure the conditions there are 10 times better than they are in some other places.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
How do we know when it's a sweatshop? Is it child labor? Is that what the determination is for a sweatshop?
Yeah, I think the nomenclature has kind of fallen out of use even to describe that. But yeah, I think the dividing line is child labor.
Yeah, because I know it was like a whole big thing like when Kathy Lee Gifford had the sweatshop. But I don't really know exactly what constitutes a sweatshop.
Yeah, I'm a little fuzzy on the details myself. But to be a little PC about it, we should call it the garment factory.
All right, garment factory. Fair enough. Okay, so I loved Leo so much during this episode. I was laughing with everybody who was working in the garment factory.
Yeah, well, I guess the question is, Rob, would you have finished his shirt for 1,000 rupees?
Well, how much is 1,000 rupees?
It's about $16.
Now, is that actually what he had?
I think that's what he had. It looked like they had 1,000 rupee notes.
Now, is that allowed? Could you do that? Could you pay somebody your money to do your task?
Hell no, you couldn't.
Oh, okay.
He'd get in a lot of trouble for that.
So he was joking.
I think there are points where you're allowed to bribe people, but performing a task, if you're doing a roadblock, you have to be the one to do the roadblock.
Now, could he say, hypothetically, now he's surrounded by people who know how to do the task. Could he say, I'll pay you 1,000 rupees to show me what to do?
Well, there was a demonstration there. They could watch someone do it all day long if they wanted. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much that would help. I think someone could certainly, in some cases, locals have stepped in and like offered guidance. Like I think in some seasons where they have like a really heavy thing that they have to move from one place to another, they get the help of locals to do it and it's not a big deal. So I think it depends a lot on the task.
Okay. So did you like the shirt they ended up making?
It seemed like an okay shirt.
Yeah. Would you wear a Columbo Rowing Club shirt if we had one for you?
I feel like that's kind of a... It looked kind of hipstery. I think maybe I could rock that.
Yeah. It was kind of like a bowling shirt.
Yeah, it did look a bit like a bowling shirt.
Okay. And then ultimately, everybody ends up getting through the task. A couple people were helping each other. We saw Connor and Jen working together. I feel like... And now this is an episode where Jen and Caroline come in second place. Have they mastered the art of pairing up with people on The Amazing Race?
Yeah, I think it was something that they executed very well in their previous season. They know how to get people to help them. They know how to pick out who's going to help them. And they know when to ask for help. I think those are vastly underestimated skills.
I think they're very good at like, okay, well, we don't know how to do this. And let's find the team that is good at this and work with them. And I can't believe we're 5 weeks in here and are sitting here with Jen and Caroline at second place. And I feel like I will correct myself here. I feel like I have been, I don't want to say unfair, but I feel like I have not been overly generous with my praise for Jen and Caroline, but I think it's time that I have to say that good job to Jen and Caroline.
Yeah, well, you're by far not the only one who's been doing that, Rob. It's been, I think the problem is that the number of people who say that they are very good at the social game and say they're going to work the social game is a lot bigger than the number of people that successfully work the social game. And I think as a result, you start to associate that strategy with teams that suck. So your automatic assumption is a team that's using that strategy sucks. And they don't suck.
Yeah, no, they've been very good, and I have to be fair. When people are doing good, I'm going to call it out, and when people are not doing good, I'm going to call it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dave and Connor, still, how is this a second or third first place finish for them?
I think it's a third.
Third.
I'd have to look that up. But
Dave and Connor are a machine.
Yeah, I mean, we said it last leg. They looked really, really good up until the moment of the Achilles tendon.
Yeah. They are really just, you know, it doesn't seem like anybody here can beat them. I guess the Cowboys would probably be the closest that you would say that could. But right now, I feel like there's nothing they could throw at Dave and Connor except for an Achilles tendon that could slow them down.
Yeah, you know, he has another Achilles tendon.
No.
I'm just saying.
No. I can't. They can't go out that way.
No, they really can't. I hope they go far. And if they can't go far, I hope they go out in some way that doesn't involve further bodily injury to Dave.
Yeah. Now, Margie and Luke, when they showed up to the mat, how far after Brendan and Rachel do you think that was?
That was a few hours.
It was dark when...
Yeah, it was dark.
When they showed up.
Yeah, it looked like everybody got to the other town. I feel like it was pretty early morning because they went in at 5:45 to the temple. And they got on the train right away. Margie and Luke didn't get on a train until like 10 a.m. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Or it might have even been later than that. I feel like maybe it was even into the afternoon.
All right. Jess, so we're going to jump into some questions from people that sent them in from Twitter. Of course, on Sunday night, you can send them in. Either send them in to @RobSesternino and @HaymakerHattie, and we'll ask them here live on our amazing race wrap up. Of course, Monday, I will speak with Margie and Luke, and then Jess and I will be live at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, to talk with Gary and Will from Amazing Race 21.
Yep, that's right. And they're huge fans of the show, so I know it's going to be fun.
Huge fans of The Amazing Race or Rob Has a Podcast?
The Amazing Race. Oh. I know they are at least passingly familiar with Rob Has a Podcast, but they're super Amazing Race fans and they know their stuff. So I think it's going to be a really good time.
Did they have a nickname on their season?
We gave them a nickname.
We called them Big and Little.
Big and Little because they were about a foot apart. So,
and they were not on board with that?
I never got any feedback from them. We can ask them how they feel about that, I guess.
Okay.
Well, but I feel like the height disparity was something that they kind of jokingly...
They played into.
Yeah, they played into it.
Okay. All right. So let's start off with a tweet here from @P566. Wants me to ask Margie what happened with the flights. Weird that two teams had a 30-minute connection versus leaving the next day. Do you think that is weird? I know it's a question more for Margie than for you, Jessica.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. I actually have read a little bit about what happened there. Over on Reality Fan Forum, I was looking at this tonight. There was one of the regular posters on Reality Fan Forum happened to be in Kuala Lumpur at the time that the teams were heading out. And he ended up helping Margie and Luke try to find a flight for a very long time and exhausted a lot of options, and they were not willing to take anything that had more than one connection. So that limited their options. I think they were right to do that, but it just happened. They got there. There were not a lot of free flights available.
By the way, this is very challenging for me tonight to go through my Twitter timeline and ask questions about Margie because my timeline is full of people ask me questions about Margie and people ask me questions about Maggie on The Walking Dead. So there's a lot of Margie, Maggie, Uma Oprah going on in my timeline. Okay. So this is from Chad Shepard, who wants to know, more affected by a flight time, Luke and Margie or the laughing Sri Lankan sewing worker? There you go. Yeah,
that was a good one, Chad.
Yeah.
I got to say, if a team was ever going to be screwed by airport luck, I wanted it to be the Globetrotters just because there would be so many great jokes we could make about flight time and flight time.
Yeah. Yes, very, very, very good. Flight time, he was being extra funny, really pumped up Big Easy.
Yeah. And I think the only thing I don't like about that is that they play the Globetrotter song every time they do that. And I guess they're getting their money's worth because they paid for it. But, oh man, I hate that song.
Yeah. Okay. So, Diego Peña, what song do you hate? Oh, the Globetrotter song, Sweet Georgia Brown?
Yes. I cannot stand Sweet Georgia Brown. It's making me into a Generals fan.
Diego Peña wants to know, would you trust yourself doing a roadblock just because you watched your mom do something similar for years? I think we're talking about Leo, that he wanted to do the roadblock because he watched his mom sew.
Yeah, well, I think that's a better foundation than just going into it blind.
Yeah.
At least you know the motions. At least you know that you have to press the foot pedal, which Jessica apparently didn't.
Yeah. This whole episode, were you very disappointed that we didn't get to see the Twinnies in their homeland?
Yeah, they have to be so upset about this.
Yeah, very, like, very sad.
I didn't even consider that they would come to Sri Lanka because the Twinnies were in the cast, but here they are. And, well, Twinnies are going to Sri Lanka anyway, so at least they get there if it's on their own dime.
Will Sardo says, do you think that they should have shown at least some of Margie and Luke at the detour and or roadblock? I liked in the episode when they were really starting to try to sell a storyline like, you know, Margie could get here any second now and she could be like the best sewer in the world.
Yeah, I don't think they were really even trying to sell that line at that point.
Yeah. Do they still make Margie and Luke do the challenge? Like when it's like they're the last team to arrive, do they still make them do it?
Yeah, they usually, I know they definitely used to, because this came up, actually it came up in Malaysia in Amazing Race 11 with Uchenna and Joyce. They got very far behind, and at the end, they ended up doing all the tasks and going to the pit stop, even though they were like 11 hours behind at that point.
Yeah. I guess when it gets really bad, then Phil just comes and says, okay, all right, that'll do it.
I think if Phil doesn't have to get on a flight to get to the next location, they will just let him go out there for as long as possible. And since they're not going anywhere in the next leg, Phil had all the time in the world.
And I have a feeling Mr. Inspector really gets a little more generous with his, yeah, that's good. That'll do.
Yeah, just sew a couple of pieces of fabric together. Yeah, you're good.
That'll do, Margie. Okay. Brendan Fitzpatrick wants to know, had Margie and Luke taken the Brenchel flight, would they have placed and who's last instead? All right, so let's say hypothetically Margie and Luke get on the flight with Brenchel. Do you think they would have beaten Brenchel out?
I don't know. It's really hard to say because we don't know we didn't see them do the tasks, so we have no idea how they would have done at the tasks. And I feel like it might have been close, but I'm not sure they would have pulled it out. I think Luke would have been upset because I think as soon as he got to the task, when it was completely out of his control, he was okay. But I think as soon as it's might be his fault that they get eliminated, I think that's when he starts to melt down.
I don't know, because Brendan and Rachel had to do the speed bump too, and they came in last. So they came in seventh. So the question is, I mean, could Margie and Luke have beaten Brenchel, who had to do a speed bump? And I kind of feel like, I mean, is it crazy to think that Margie, let's just assume maybe Margie knows how to operate a sewing machine, hypothetically. I mean, they could have easily done that task, and it really would have been a question of, would they have been able to do the spinning plates? Do you think that would have played into their strength?
Yeah, I don't know if they would have fished or spun plates.
I see them spinning plates.
Yeah, I guess I see them doing that too.
Yeah. Okay. Russell Feathers wants to know, can Dave and Connor hold on to the success that they've had so far? Or do you think one bad leg will send them home? And now, is that a pun?
I think that's a pun. And if it is, it's a terrible pun.
Not cool. Not cool.
I guess we could say they are continuing to have a leg up on the competition.
Yes, there you go.
And the argument that they might lose momentum doesn't really have a leg to stand on.
Okay. We got it. Kyle,
because I could keep going.
Kyle Switzer wants to know, did Flight Time use Big Easy's real name during the roadblock? Is Big Easy Nate or is Big Easy's real name Tom Cruise? Tommy Cruise.
Big Easy is Nate.
Okay.
Because I'm Facebook friends with Herbert Flight Time Lang.
Ooh, so. Have you associated with Herbert Flight Time Lang?
No, I think I've liked a couple of his pictures, but I'm friends with a lot of the cast on Facebook. They accept everybody.
That's a little bit of a name drop, Jess.
Well, it was relevant information. And also, Phil sometimes calls them Herb and Nate. He hasn't for a long time, but he did.
Will you be posting on Herb's wall that you are considering becoming a Generals fan?
I think I'll keep that information to myself.
That seems like grounds to remove you as a Facebook friend.
Yeah, I don't want to get defriended over this.
Chris Tutak wants to know, would the Afghanimals have been penalized if somebody took Leo's offer to finish sewing his shirt? You said absolutely.
Yeah, I think they absolutely would have been.
Yeah, okay.
Because the thing we also know is that we've been told by racers before that the task judges are not actually doing the judging. There's a producer standing off screen that's telling the judge to say they passed or they didn't pass.
Yeah.
I'm sure that if he tried to do that, producer would be like, nope.
No. Okay. And Matt Gregg wants to know, can you confirm if the clothing roadblock was sponsored by The Gap? What store did you think that they were working at? The shirt that they made didn't look like a Gap shirt.
No, it didn't. That was way too cool for The Gap.
You really like this Columbo Rowing Club.
I don't know. I like strange sports team logos.
Yeah.
I own some clothing that was made in Sri Lanka. I don't know what exactly, but I know I've seen that label before.
Yeah. Did you like the screen printing of the Sri Lankan sigil?
Yeah, that was pretty cool looking. It looked like it was fun to do, too. Like, the thing I like about the speed bumps is that they suck up a little time, but they're almost always kind of fun.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that was Amazing Race season 24, episode 5 recap. All right, so we have a lot to do on a busy Monday on The Amazing Race. Plus, we've got a lot going on post-show recaps as well this week. I am starting my 10-day rewatch of Game of Thrones season 3 with Josh Wigler. We are kicking that off live at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific, if you want to check that out. Jess, we have a season 3 episode 1 rewatch coming up tomorrow afternoon.
That's going to be a lot of fun. I think season 3 is their best one yet.
Yes. All right. And Jess, you'll be joining us at some point in our Game of Thrones coverage as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you guys know how I am about The Amazing Race. I'm kind of 10 times that about Game of Thrones.
Oh, my God. Well, are you read the books, too, or just the TV show?
Yeah, I'll put it to you this way. When we go traveling into foreign countries, I go and buy a copy of the first book in whatever language the country is, and it helps me to kind of pick up some words in the language.
I didn't know this. So you go to another country and then you pick up a Song of Fire and Ice in the native tongue of whatever country you're in?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Cause I've read it enough times that I always know what's going on.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, that's I find that very surprising and not surprising at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the podcast has not begun to know what kind of huge nerd I am.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm also going to, we are covering 24 as well on post-show recaps, getting ready for the premiere of 24 Live Another Day. So Josh Wigler is watching one season of 24 a week, and we're also recapping that. So join us for a 2-hour block on Monday. We're going to go right into 24 right after that. So Game of Thrones and 24 on Monday during the day on postshowrecaps.com. And then on Monday night, we're going to have our Amazing Race live show with Gary and Will. And then on Tuesday, I'm going to have the return of AJ Mass when we get down to 12 people here coming up on this upcoming Survivor. So it's time to talk about the 12 archetypes of the Survivor season with AJ. So a lot to do here in the next 2 or 3 days. There's always a lot to do, but a lot to do, especially in the next 48 hours. Got about 3 or 4 new podcasts coming your way. Okay.
All right, that's a lot of podcasting.
Well, that's a lot of podcasts. I think it's actually, maybe five podcasts, 4 or 5. It's a lot of podcasts. Anyway, and then we'll get into all the Survivor stuff on Wednesday. So we'd love to hear what you guys think about all of this stuff from tonight's episode in the comments. As usual, we've gotten so many comments on these podcasts. It really makes me feel like you guys are, this has been a good decision to build the Amazing Race wrap up on Sunday nights.
Yeah, all the reactions I've heard from the fans have been entirely positive.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you guys so much. And then we will be back on Monday night. Jess, have a great Monday, and I'll talk to you tomorrow night.
All right. Looking forward to it.
Take care, everybody. Bye.